You are Locked On Wizards, your daily Washington Wizards podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Did you call game? I called game.
Gilbert, fade away.
Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the Locked On Wizards podcast. Ben Standig coming to you live on a Tuesday night here in the always rainy D.C. area. I don't know, it feels like it's been raining for ever and a day at this point. We'll get through it. Hopefully you guys had a great Memorial Weekend. The Wizards got back in action today out at the Verizon Center. They had their first formal pre-draft workout. I was there and had a chance while I was there to be part of the group that spoke with now former Maryland guard Melo Trimble. He was the headliner out there today. And I guess you would have to say he is somebody that the Wizards could potentially consider with their second round pick, the 52nd overall pick in the draft. And that's kind of the gist of what today's podcast will be about. Essentially the look at the Wizards options in the second round of the 2017 NBA draft. The draft is not till June 22nd, but got to start talking about this here at some point. So I figure with today's kickoff, today would be a good time. So I'm going to play for you guys a little bit of the sound from Melo Trimble today. And then later in the podcast, a guy who likes college basketball, Troy Mocker from CSN Mid-Atlantic, will join me to discuss some of these potential guys that the Wizards could target in round two. Just to let you guys know, though, here's what's on tap for the rest of this week. First off, we already have up a couple of podcasts this week, including the first player review for the Wizards, deep dive into all things Otto Porter. So you can check that out on iTunes or Stitcher. Also, I've already recorded two other podcasts that I'll be playing for you later this week. First off, another player review on this one on Bojan Bogdanović, but also started looking at potential wing players the Wizards could look at in free agency should Bogdanović, a restricted free agent, not return. I did that with Mr. Connor Dirks from truthaboutit.net. Also, a good get here for the podcast, in my humble opinion, former NBA All-Star Kenny Anderson, great player at Georgia Tech. I saw him play at high school, best high school player I've ever seen live. I had him on the podcast. He's got a new documentary out about his life and sort of the troubles, the highs and the lows, I guess I should say, of being a professional athlete and sort of dealing with life after the NBA. He was really interesting to talk with. I'll probably put that one up tomorrow. Also talked about his take on John Wall as well, point guard to point guard. So all that and hopefully more coming up. I've also got some other player interviews from today's workout. There were several local guys out there. Keith and Savage, former GW player who transferred, went to Butler, was out there. Jamel Artis, who's from Baltimore. Dennis Dixon. Oops, sorry. Daniel Dixon. Dennis Dixon, former quarterback. Daniel Dixon, William and Mary player, also DJ Fenner, who played at Gonzaga one year, his dad, former NFL running back, Derek Fenner, and also a non-local guy, James Blackman from Indiana. They were out there along with the aforementioned Melo Trimble. And, look, obviously Melo Trimble is a very interesting player on a lot of levels, and I'll talk more about him with Troy. From a pure need standpoint, it's what the Wizards need, right? They need a backup point guard behind John Wall. Now, maybe Tomas Satoransky takes over that role. I kind of think he can. He's got some things to work on, his shot and his ball handling in particular. But he's got a shot. Either way, I think when you form a 15-man roster, you need three point guards. I always view it as you need three point guards and you need three people that can defend the paint. I think that's one reason in terms of the paint why Daniel Oshefu stayed up on the roster all year where other guys went back and forth. But they need a third point guard one way or the other. look, Melo Trimble would bring 3 years of college experience into the mix. He played at a high level in college. If you watched him play, he always seemed to come up big in tight games and clutch moments. You obviously look for that in a player. That said, he's not the biggest point guard in the world. His three-point shot really dropped off the last couple of seasons, you know, as did, I would say, his play overall. He's certainly an interesting player. If you look at Draft Express's rankings, he's going to not get drafted, which, of course, let's not forget the Wizards have three players on the team this year in McClellan, or Sheldon Mack now, Daniel Leshefu, and Daniel House, none of whom were drafted. So the Wizards aren't afraid of going down that route if needed. So he's interesting, without question. And that's why there were a lot of media contingent there today. You got the D.C. people. You got the Baltimore faction. Lots more cameras than usual. So you have a lot of different questions. And I'm going to play a little bit of audio for you right now on from Melo Trimble, a wide range of questions, starting with how did his workout go?
How did the workout go?
It went well. A lot of running, which is expected at workouts, and they made it tough on us. You know, see if we're in shape, and you know, during the game, you got to make shots when you're tired. So we did a lot of that to see if we were going to make shots when we were tired, and it was just a good workout from start to finish.
And this wasn't your first of the pre-draft process, right?
This is my third workout.
How does it compare to the other two?
This is the toughest one. A lot of conditioning. It was competitive about the other workouts, but just a lot of conditioning.
Where were the other workouts at?
Brooklyn, Chicago.
And then do you have me lined up for the future?
Yeah, I go to Philly on the 4th and Houston on the 5th. I paid attention to them ever since I was young. You know, even when I was watching Maryland, I was watching the Wizards. So I've always been a Wizards fan and always watched them as well.
You obviously played college basketball locally, so you're not afraid of playing locally. With the idea of therefore playing for the local team, that you, it doesn't seem like you would shy away from that.
I would love to play for the local team to represent where I'm from.
Melo, what was different about this pre-draft process compared to last year when you decided to come back for your junior year, but this year you decided to, you know, stay out and turn pro?
Last year I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. I was still in school going to these workouts and doing a combine, so I had a lot on my mind, and I just wasn't clear on what I wanted to do. And obviously this year I signed with an agent early, so I mean I was able to have a clear mind about everything and just, you know, wanted to prove myself at this level. And now when I go to these workouts, I just go on with a free mind and just, you know, compete.
Between 2 months ago with the Xavier loss and now and working out in Vegas, what has been like the thing you've most heavily worked on?
Everything, especially my shooting from the NBA three-point range. It's a lot deeper and just trying to get myself in a good shape and, you know, work on my body.
Whether it was at the combine or in the previous two workouts, what's the type of feedback that you're receiving from, you know, the guys who watched the workout?
The feedback I got was all positive. Just continue to get better and just be myself and don't try to do anything I can't do.
What do you feel like you can bring to this team if you were to land here?
Competitiveness, winning. I came from a winning program. Another player that just helped the team. John Wall's a great point guard, so I'll be able to learn from him. And, you know, the other players on the team, like Bradley Beal and Otto Porter. So, I mean, just those group of guys right there, I just learn from them and continue to get better. And, you know, whenever my name is called to get in the game, hopefully I produce.
Where has the game evolved since you left Maryland? Where do you think you're, you know, have taken the biggest step?
Shooting. Out in Vegas, I get up a lot of shots. Just going against guys that are taller than me, different guys I didn't play, you know, this past year since I've been at Maryland. And it's just a different atmosphere out there with those group of guys. So ever since I've been gone, I've just been, you know, like he talked about, the physical play. I mean, we've been out there pretty much beating each other up just to get stronger and be used to the no calls and stuff like that. So, I mean, just everything about my game has, you know, changed since from going out there.
All right, so there's a little bit of Melo Trimble today from his workout at the Verizon Center with with five other prospects. I think he when asked, as you guys just heard, what he's been working on the most since the season ended, he mentioned his outside shooting, and that's definitely a must for him. I really like Melo Trimble's intangibles. He just seems to come up with the right play at the right time, always had a knack for getting to the free throw line. Now, that was in college, where he's, you know, he was an all Big Ten performer last year. He was, you know, from the moment he got on the college scene, he was, you know, one of the best guards in the country, seemingly. So he was the man, you know. He's not going to be that way in the NBA, maybe ever, and certainly not coming in as a rookie, potentially, whether he's in the second round or an undrafted player. So that those intangibles, still important, absolutely, but, you know, you've got to develop a little bit more. He's going to have to make that three-point shot, the NBA three-point shot, which is deeper than the college line, for him to even have hope of sticking with the team. I didn't get a ton of intel on this practice, but from what I could gather, it did sound like he did a pretty reasonable job on that. I'll work to get some more intel on it, but it sounds like he did pretty decently in that with the three-point shot in mind. So we'll see. You know, I think that if Draft Express's rankings are to be believed, Melo Trimble's not going to get drafted. They've got him somewhere in the 90s, I believe, of the prospects in the 2017 class. Doesn't mean anything truly, but they typically have a pretty good handle. Things will change during workouts, though. Some guys will go up, some guys will go down. I'd be surprised if Melo Trimble has some major rises, but you never know. It was sort of a bummer because what was really interesting about this workout initially was that the Wizards said that Iowa State point guard Monty Morris, who is considered more of a second-round pick, was supposed to be here. From what I can tell, he basically had flight problems and couldn't make it. In fact, they ended up calling on Keith and Savage, again, a former GW player, the morning of the workout. Keith told me that he was literally he went in to do his workout at a local gym with his trainer, and they were like, "Oh, nope, turn around, go get out of here, go to the Wizards. They want you." So, you know, I guess, you know, it was a bummer. You know, good for Keith and Savage. I did talk to him a bit. I'll play some of that audio later in the week. Bummer, though, for the Wizards, I think, that you couldn't get a look at Monty Morris, a guy who, you know, has sort of those classic lead guard, you know, pass first point guard skills. And to see him go up against Trimble, I think, would have been pretty interesting. Nonetheless, more workouts to come, although the Wizards said they're not expecting to have any more workouts until Monday. I wouldn't read anything into that other than just that. And I also wouldn't read into anything about Morris not coming until proven otherwise, that it was just, you know, potentially a missed flight. You're a second-round pick. You're not going to, unless some team guarantees you they're going to take you in round one, you don't skip workouts, especially for a team. If you're a point guard, you want to be on a team like the Wizards. They need point guard help. Clearly, it would be an obvious fit if they were to, you know, if they were to like him. I will say this, though, so this doesn't get lost in the shuffle. I don't know if I've ranked the offseason priorities for the Wizards quite yet. They need a wing threat behind Beal. They need another shooter off the bench, especially if Bojan Bogdanovic does not return. They definitely need a point guard, and I think they could use an athletic four behind Markieff Morris. And depending on what happens with Marcin Gortat, they may need another big man. All of that said, I think when you're picking 52nd, you take the best player available. This is different than if we're talking about a second-round pick in the NFL draft, where is it best player available or is it at need position? I always say for the NFL draft, it's essentially a combination of the two. It's a best player available at a position of need. For the Wizards in round two, it's not a lock that this guy will ever make the team. You take the best player available. And if there's some fortune with the Wizards, other than small forward, where presumably you'll have Otto Porter and Kelly Oubre, they don't have, you know, they can afford to take almost anything and probably find some minutes for this person. But again, that's even assuming they're going to play. So at the end of the day, somebody you think can help you and somebody who's got some upside, because, you know, a second round pick is probably not going to get tons of run in year one. You know, essentially Sheldon McClellan, Daniel Eshefu, more or less, they were second round picks. Even if they were undrafted, it's, you know, all the sort of the same thing. And they essentially didn't play much at all in their rookie season. So don't have high expectations for this, but at the same point, you know, this is the pick the Wizards have. They're going to have some roster spots available. They're going to need some relatively cheap talent. That's what the second round pick offers you. We'll see what they can do. And what I want to do now is get into some of these other options that the Wizards could look at in round two. All right, now I've tried to get the best guess I can possibly get for this podcast. We've had NBA insiders like Michael Lee and David Aldridge, had Mark freaking Cuban. We've had Martin Gortat give a long interview. You know, other players, coaches, Glenn Consor, lots of different interesting people. I don't know if today qualifies, but we're gonna see what happens. First time he's on the podcast. Just consider this the warning. It's all I can say. With that said, Troy Mocker.
Thanks for having me. That was a rousing introduction. You know, it's the almost the dead of summer. Sometimes you got to go to the well you don't want to go to. I'm the deepest reliever you got, who just got called up from single A. So,
well, this is, you know, you got to know when to pick your spots. And if we're gonna call on you, this is when you need you, because you're the guy who watches lots of college basketball. You were part of the I always thought was a really good site, Ballin' as a Habit, with Rob Dowster, who we've had on this podcast before. This is what you do. You live and breathe college basketball. You watch it. You're becoming more of an adult, so obviously life gets in the way a little bit. But this is what you do, and we need to go deep because of the Wizards, as we've discussed now a bunch, they've got the 52nd overall pick, no first rounder. This is where we start getting the names of guys that you're like, wait, who? Wait, what's going on? Do we really think he can be good? And that's where we're gonna see what you can bring to the table here. Now, I've already talked about Melo Trimble a little bit. He was out today at the Wizards. I think James Blackman from Indiana was probably the other guy who's maybe the most interesting. Monty Morris from Iowa State, another point guard, was supposed to come, didn't make it. I'll start there with those three guys. You got any thoughts on those guys as players and relative to the Wizards?
Yeah, and when you start to look at players deep in the draft, you know, you're looking at your undersized guards, and it as we're getting more freshman, sophomore focused, and as we have been, a lot of these guys, the James Blackman Jr.'s, the Melo Trimble's, and Monty Morris, all had pretty stellar college careers. They didn't have the upside. They didn't have the intangibles, the athleticism, all the buzzwords. But all three had very, very good college careers. You know, James Blackman, guard from Indiana, highly touted recruit, McDonald's All-American, you know, went and played with Yogi Ferrell his first year, and they didn't really mesh well together. Their playing styles, and Blackman had I think microfracture knee surgery, I believe. So he didn't get to log a lot of minutes. But he's an explosive player, not great on the defensive end. And I think if you're looking for a backup guard, the Wizards really need to look at someone who will play defense. James Blackman Jr., not great defensively.
By the way, fun fact, while we were out there today, at the end of practice, or at the end of the workout, I was talking to him with Chase Hughes, and Chase says, hey, didn't your dad, was your dad a player? He goes, yeah, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, just to show how old I am, I'm like, yeah, he played with the Mel Turpin, Sam Bowie teams in Kentucky. And he's like, yeah, I'm pretty sure Chase laughed at me at that point for knowing that, because, again, I am old. But anyway.
Yeah, no. And his...
But he can shoot, though, right?
I mean, yes.
Because the Wizards, the one thing they've lacked all year, we talk all the time about needing a backup for Wall. They never had a backup for Beal, and I really do think that cost them as much as anything, because whenever Beal would leave, they just didn't have another shooter who could also play the two defensively.
Yeah, and the thing with James Blackman Jr. is he's, I wouldn't say a high-volume ball handler and shooter, but he does not do as well of a job as his teammate Yogi Ferrell did in terms of coming off screens, creating his own shot when he doesn't have the ball. So he will need the ball in his hands, but if he's a backup, more likely he's not going to be playing with John Wall. So the ball will be in his hands more often. You know, he's got a good frame at 6'4". He is athletic, not freakishly athletic, you know, and he's had a knee issue. But at this point, you know, it's hard to really split hairs whether player A, B, or C, if they're all at the same positions and all in the same kind of build. And when you look at a Monty Morris, a Melo Trimble, and a James Blackman Jr., they're all in that 6'3", 6'4", range, not freakishly athletic. Good shooters, can drive, you know, Melo and Monty Morris are great floor generals, have like high IQ and leadership. We just didn't see a lot of that from Indiana. Could be said from the head coach, Tom Crean, or because they were going kind of inside outside with, you know, Thomas Bryant and OG Anunoby. So I think James Blackman would be an okay pick. You know, if I had to pick between him and Melo Trimble, I would take Melo Trimble, even though Melo is not a great shooter. James Blackman is a good shooter, and I think in backup roles, you're looking for specialists or people who can specialize in a specific area, as opposed to just kind of pretty good guard. And so if you're just saying, hey, we're getting you to come off the bench and shoot, that's it, I would probably go James Blackman. But I think maybe because being from the area and seeing what Melo did, you're just now kind of rooting for him, and you've seen that he put the team on his back. He carried the Terps all year when they should have had other options, and they really didn't. That's a skill set that you like to see, and perhaps he can do that, you know, with the kind of the bench mob.
You know, the point you just made a second ago, let's not gloss over that, because you made a very good point. I want to
I'll take it.
No, but like, there's two things you're looking at here with these picks. You're either A, looking for a guy you think has huge upside,
yes,
that you think is going to outproduce the pick, or like you said, when it comes, and I think this is the thing that fans make a mistake on. It doesn't matter whether you're talking about rookies or anybody. The spots say 9 through 15 or 10 through 15. You don't want just a guy who's good.
Yep.
You need a guy who does this, a guy who can specifically make a three, block shots, defend wings, whatever it is. So, yeah, if Blackman can shoot that three or whatever, or Trimble, you know, you think can run the offense, then that trumps, in my opinion, just for a guy who's good at, like, sort of everything, unless you think that guy has just, like, crazy big upside.
Yeah.
Now, a guy who doesn't, I would say, have huge upside, but then again, people probably said the same thing about Malcolm Brogdon a year ago,
yep,
and I think this guy is sort of potentially this year's Malcolm Brogdon, and that would be another local kid, Josh Hart. Sidwell friends wanted to go to Georgetown. Georgetown said, screw you. No, they didn't say that. They just went elsewhere.
Yes.
And he goes to Villanova, turns into a huge player for them. He's part of their national championship team, Big East Player of the Year. We're talking about like a 6'6 wing. You know, he's, when I say somebody isn't the most athletic player, I'm talking relative to the NBA, yeah, not to me.
Yeah.
But he's got high intangibles. He's very much like Brogdon. He knows how to defend, can shoot to three. He's the kind of guy that if he came in, again, maybe there's not massive upside, but he'd be ready to go and help you play. And obviously the Wizards kind of need that. Where are you on Josh Hart if he's there at 52?
The Wizards need plug-and-play guys, and that's what you're getting in Josh Hart. He's, like you said, not the greatest athlete. A bit doughy for even a high-end Division I player, and I probably shouldn't be the one to comment on being a bit doughy. That's all that I am. But he can make plays. He's been there before. All the intangible buzzwords, very high IQ. And, you know, while it doesn't matter a lot, I think it's easier to bring in a local guy from a fan perspective. It generates a little bit more buzz, even if it's for the 10 minutes at the end of the game, every game. You do that over 82 game season, has a big moment here or there, you've now cultivated almost like a cult following. And it's not that that's it. He's a ball player. He can play. You know, he's a versatile wing who's really good with his back to the basket. Now he's going up in kind of weight class, so to speak. You can't really do that against some of the bigger forwards in the league, but he'll grow into that and learn how to. I think because he's such a smart player, that will help him a lot. And again, at 52, you know, what are you looking for? Best available talent? Because there's going to be guys there. Are you looking for high IQ player who can play multiple positions, get you different points? He can do that. If you're looking for specialists, maybe he's not the guy, but then you could, you know, find a specialist. I think there are, at the point guard and shooting guard positions in the late 50 range, there's going to be guys. Even like, you know, if it's Nigel Williams-Goss, the point guard from Gonzaga, or Wesley Iwundu, the shooting guard from Kansas State. Dudes who will be there in the back end, and every year there are players who don't get drafted, and it boggles my mind that these guys were standouts in college, they didn't get drafted. This is the year we're going to see even more than ever, just because this is such a loaded draft. I mean, you look at...
And that's why also at 52, you never assume a second-round pick's making the team, but there's at least a little more hope for the Wizards this year in the sense that, like you just said, it is a deep draft. Some guys are going to fall, and you just got to hope you get the right guy and the right fit. I always think that fit is as much as important as anything. Some guys are good, but you land on a team who runs this style or they have these players, it's not going to work. But other guys just works magic.
It's really interesting because more than I feel like in NBA compared to the NFL draft, more than ever at the top of the draft, the lottery, more often than not, it's best available talent, highest upside. Unless you need a point guard and there are three centers, maybe you trade back. In football, it is best available mixed with a higher percentage of need because you need to fill specific spots to build up depth and get your team going. But in the NBA, once you get to the back end, it is kind of almost, instead of best available, it's need, finding a need. It's why you see guys do, you know, Euro stashes or picking guys who are off the grid, because you have your talent, your starting five and your first few guys off the bench. Now you're seeing if there's someone who may not be the most talented, but can fill a need and become that team's go-to person for that need. And I, again, this year, there's so many names you could rattle off. Two guys from South Carolina, PJ Dozier, shooting or point guard, and Sindarius Thornwell, shooting guard, who can get to the rim almost like, I think he's a little bit better and a little bit smaller than Daniel House, who did good things for the Wizards in Summer League last year and in the D League. That's a guy who will probably be there at 52. But there's so many options this year in the back end, just because of how deep this draft is with the guys up front, graduating seniors, and the upperclassmen who decided to improve their stock by staying after last year, which was a good draft, but not nearly as good as this year. So the Wizards could go in 15 different ways. I just hope they take someone and don't trade it, because there's just way too many good players that I'm also familiar with that I have a really good understanding of that I would like to see how they do at the next level. I'm a big draft fan because I've watched these guys for 3 years, and I want to see the immediate transition. After year two in the NBA, I kind of started to forget about them because I'm a college guy. But there's plenty of good college guys this year for them to take at 52.
All right, now, so let me not forget to plug. Last week I did a list of the potential players the Wizards could get at 52. You mentioned Thornwell. He was on that list. Josh Hart's there. Monty Morris is there. So check that out. I won't spoil the rest of it because Troy would yell at me. He wants you to go there to look at it. So go to CSN, Mid-Atlantic, or you know, Google me, NBA Draft. You'll find it. All right, in the last couple of minutes we have, you've got Draft Express open. Open table, any names jump out at you? We've been talking mostly, I guess, about guards and wings. The Wizards could go in any direction. Any name jumps out to you? And anybody that you're like, dude, if I'm the pick, give me that guy.
Yeah, there's a few, and especially down the stretch in the playoffs, you know, their front court was not great. And certainly you're not going to draft a power forward in the second round and start him immediately, but you can develop guys. And there's a guy who, Draft Express, who's the foremost draft expert. They have Nevada sophomore Cam Oliver going to the Wizards at 52. And you probably don't know anything about Nevada basketball. And it's not UNLV. It's University of Nevada, Reno, basically Nevada.
They're the Wolfpack.
The Wolfpack, absolutely.
And it's Wolfpack, two words, as opposed to the NC State version. I got in trouble with that once I wrote an article about a Nevada kid and the editor yelled at me.
Wolfpack. Is not a copywriter's friend at all. So Cam Oliver is, again, he was, I believe he was first team Mountain West. I think he might've been player of the year, but I could be mistaken. Freakish athleticism. This is a guy that you're taking because of his upside, wingspan, intangibles, all the buzzwords that Jay Billis loves. And he can play too. He's an incredible shot blocker. He's got, you know, at 6'8", he's got like a 73-inch wingspan, averaged 16 points and 9 rebounds a game. And while you'd say, you know, he didn't play at the highest level of competition, Nevada went 13-14-0 in the regular season and lost 2 or 3 games in a competitive Mountain West. Let's make no mistake about it. It was not great, but it was competitive, and he really rose to the occasion. This is a guy I would love to see the Wizards take because they need help and depth at the front court. And he's a freak athlete who can use his athleticism as he's still learning the NBA game. It's a different game. It's at a different speed. He has the athleticism to at least keep up on the speed end as he learns the ins and outs. So that would be a great guy. Another guy, Jerron Blossom game, small forward, power forward from Clemson, who people were projecting as a first-team All-American this year, had projecting Clemson as a dark horse Final Four pick. And they bombed pretty hard. Also, you know, the ACC was loaded, to say the least, this year. But he is a high upside guy who scouts loved, is really versatile, can shoot, can put the ball on the deck, good wingspan, can defend, and, you know, was a senior, logged 4 years. That's a lot of games, a lot of minutes, has a very good basketball IQ. And then if we're staying at kind of the slasher small forward position and in the ACC, Dwayne Bacon from Florida State. Florida State had NBA talent across the board this year and last year and the year before. And he's dropped in terms of his draft stock, but still a freak athlete who is a great basketball player who can take people off the dribble even against some of the guys in the NBA, because he was doing that to some of the people now in the NBA last year and on the AAU circuit. Certainly, athleticism, maturity goes into that. But those are three guys, Cam Oliver, Jerome Blossengame, and Dwayne Bacon, who are projected in the mid to late 50s, who, if the Wizards are looking for help in the front court or in the wing, because we don't know what's going to happen to Otto Porter, if Porter leaves, Oubre will make a step up, but then you want someone slotted in there. One of these three guys would be a great fit. I really like Cam Oliver, and you know that's something I would pull if he's there at 52.
How do you think he did?
Good.
Yeah, I think you brought good energy.
Yeah.
You got some insight there. I think you passed the bar. I think that was a reasonable showing.
Hey, I am literally just looking to get another 10-day contract. So if this is, hey, you know what? We're not going to throw your name away. Cool. Put me on the back of the Rolodex. I'll be in the pen getting warm whenever you need me.
All right. So you can follow Troy on Twitter, at Troy Mocker. It's M-A-C-H-I-R. Take it at your own risk. That's all, I'll just leave it at that.
Hey, you know, lacrosse season is over, so no more lacrosse tweets. I've dialed back the MMA tweets. So it's mostly sports stuff, mainstream sports stuff.
Right.
And I'm always looking to pick up more. You know, just crossed that 5,000 follower plateau. So, yeah, come aboard. It's only going up from here. Can't get much worse.
All right. Many thanks to Troy. Thank you guys for listening. I guess I'd say thanks to Melo Trimble, but he wasn't doing it for me. But we got him on here as well. More podcasts come this week. As I already mentioned before, former NBA All-Star Kenny Anderson, a Bojan Bogdanović season review, and a whole bunch more here on the Locked On Wizards podcast. Until next time, see ya.
Beal gets open for three. Dagger!
Long drive, long bounce shot. Dagger!